Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off.
I do believe that you have to be super careful right now to be pencil, like to be getting into properties that, if all the stars align, literally, are just not a smart move right now. So I think being conservative, making sure you underwrite, or fancy way of saying analyze the property, makes sense. Even a single family home, I think that being a little more conservative right now makes sense. Having more cushion makes sense.
Hey there, welcome back to the show. I am Shauna Game, and this is Everyone's Talking Money. And this is what I believe to be the best darn money podcast you will ever listen to. All right, I want to know, is real estate investing a goal you have for 2024? But maybe you don't know where to start. Well, you're in luck, because our guest, Liz Fairclough, will blow your mind with some of the best and honestly most practical real estate investing advice you need this year. Liz co-founded the Real Estate Investor Community, which is a platform to empower women to live a financially free and balanced life on their terms. Anne co-founded the DeRosa Group with her husband, Matt. She's also the co-host of The Real Estate Investor Show. Anne co-authored the Amazon bestseller, The Only Woman in the Room, Knowledge and Inspiration from 20 Successful Real Estate Women Investors. So yeah, you can say she knows a little something about real estate investing. So in this episode, Liz shares the biggest mistake you can make when investing in real estate, the best question to ask yourself to decide if real estate investing even makes sense for you, and the advantages that women have when investing in real estate. I'm even going to share a little bit of a real estate investing dream that I hope to bring to life soon. So I think just talking about it probably it's a big step, right? You got to talk about these big goals before you actually bring them to life. Just another thing before we get into the episode, I am hosting a live virtual workshop called Spend with Intention for 2024. This workshop is a love letter to you and everything you want to do this year. I'll show you why you need to ditch your budget and create a mindful money plan. This will change how you do money forever. I also walk you through how to create intentional spending, balancing your emotions and feelings around money with all the stuff that you want to do. It is my best workshop ever, I think. So sign up by February 5th to reserve your spot at etmpod.link/spendwithintention. That's etmpod.link/spendwithintention, or easier, just head to the show notes for all the information. All right, let's dig into the conversation because there is so much good stuff that you need to know about real estate investing. Let's go. You know, we've done a lot of episodes on this show about investing in real estate. And with each new year, right, there are all these different challenges to overcome. We've just come out of the highest interest rates we've seen in a long time. The Airbnb market is saturated. A lot of investors are seeing, less than ideal returns than they did in like 2020 and 2021. And you know, there's just this, I don't know, it's like a kind of perfect storm that's happening now that's really making people think about this idea of investing in real estate. Is it good? Is it not? We're going to talk about that all. But I was reading in your bio that you say you're on a mission to transform lives through real estate. And I'm interested in this idea. I've always personally been interested in investing in real estate, but just, you know, haven't taken that plunge yet. So let's just start here. You know, how should we be thinking about investing in real estate this year, if we really like that mission, right? We really want to use it to transform our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a mission that I started with my husband back, you know, almost 17 years when we first purchased our first property. We didn't just want to buy property, but we wanted to actually, you know, transform people's lives in the process. And I know that seems like kind of hokey a little bit, like, oh, transform lives, but that's really the work that you could be doing. In real estate investing, you're creating homes for people, right? You're creating office space for commercial users or whatever the user is. I think it's an interesting market. It's an interesting market from the perspective, like, I've been at this for 17 years. So I've seen lots of different interest rates. I've seen a lot of different, you know, elements going on. And how do you thrive during that time? And I think a lot of people, especially women, because that's who I connect with every day with our community, they're nervous, right? They're just, the deals are not penciling out. I think what's happened, right, people still have in their heads during COVID, you know, the pricing has just not dropped quite yet where it needs to be dropped. And then the interest rates have gotten higher, right? So traditionally, it's getting, and I had to put 30% down, right? Like the amount you have to put down. So, and in the news, right, especially when it comes to short-term rentals, you know, a lot of areas are cracking down. A lot of bigger cities, right, could be cracking down. And like, okay, what's the regulations here? So it's a little bit, people are feeling a little uncertain. I do believe, you know, there's always real estate, you know, if you go head to head with, I'm not a stock market expert. However, but if you go head to head and saying, okay, historically, is real estate as volatile as the stock market? I mean, there's just research after research that shows how much more steady real estate is as an investment over time, of course. And so I do believe that you have to be super careful right now to be getting into properties that, if all the stars align, literally are just not a smart move right now. So I think being conservative, making sure you underwrite, or fancy way of saying analyze the property, makes sense. Even a single family home, I think that being a little more conservative right now makes sense. Having more cushion makes sense. I don't agree that it's not a good time to buy, though. If you have, and again, because as interest rates have gone up, you have sellers that have also increased their distressed situations. So you're helping, again, creating a win-win, not taking advantage of people, but creating a win-win. I do believe there is an opportunity there. And especially as the new year kind of unfolds and whatever, if we're in a recession, we're deep into a recession, we're going to be in a recession, everyone's got a different opinion. I think you can thrive if you are looking at how you can create win-wins. And I think the most important thing, Shannon, right now, Shanna, is really, are you solving problems? Because quite honestly, there's a housing shortage across the country for affordable housing, meaning literally people being able to afford where they want to live. And how can you be part of the solution? And I know it seems like a big question, but I do believe you need to ask those questions of yourself. And how do I buy an investment property for my family? You know, where do people want to live? What's affordable? What's not affordable? You know, those kinds of questions.
Okay, so tell me, like, where do you think most people get it wrong when it comes to real estate investing? Like, what are they doing? Are they just not, they not have the tools to really like suss out if it makes sense? Are they letting emotions get in the way? Like, where do you see people really get tripped up?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I think is the biggest mistake is that people get so enamored with the property. They're right. Talking about the property. They're, you know, I'll give you a quick story. Met this gentleman at like this networking event because I found a duplex and I was really excited about it. And he's telling me about the numbers and I'm like, where is it located? Oh, it's in this town. I said, you want to rent it out to nurses? That's awesome. Is there any hospitals around? It's about an hour away. I said, that might be a problem. And it seems so obvious as I'm saying it on air. But he was so enamored and so obsessed with this property that he did not know the market. Then I asked him a next question. What's the average rent for like, even if he was looking to do more of a long-term to nurses? I said, what's the average? I don't know. And then I just kept asking questions. He just didn't know. And that all has to do with the market. So number one is that people get obsessed with the wrong things. Not that you shouldn't be concerned about the property, but you really should know your market. Inside and out. So then you can move quickly when you're like presented with a property. What's a good deal? What's a bad deal? If you don't know the market and the average rental income for that type of property from a short-term perspective, from a mid-term perspective, from a long-term perspective, you're not going to be able to assess. So I think people get a little, enamored with the wrong things. I also believe that when you're figuring out like, is this going to work as an investment property? People don't run it by the right people. You know, they'll ask the realtor who's never sold an investment property before, or they'll ask their Uncle Bob who does Uncle Bob invest in real estate? So I just, and that's why I believe so much in community and what we're up to is it's about asking questions and getting support from the right people who are actually doing that right now. You know, not from a group of people who have never invested in investing in real estate. It doesn't make sense to me. So I think that's another big mistake that we ask people around in our circle or our neighbors, when in reality, we should be asking people who are doing what we want to do. So those are two big kind of mistakes off the bat.
What are some of the questions that we should be asking to, like, especially for a newbie to know, those numbers, to know the market, to be able to suss those things out.
Yeah. And I would even take it a step back. Like if we were really to say, when someone's listening to say, okay, I really like real estate. I want to invest in real estate. I think the next actually best question before we get to market, before we get to the property, before we even get to the strategy, because there's a whole other piece there, is what is my time and my money availability? Meaning, do I want to be an active investor? Meaning, do I want to go find that single family home, figure out if I should put it as a short-term rental. Do I have an interest in that? Do I have, does that give me kind of like excitement? And do I have the time and the money and the bandwidth to do that? Do I want to do that? Secondly, if I don't want to be as active, are there passive routes? Meaning I can passively invest in real estate instead of parking my money in a CD and it making me over time, it's probably in the negative. So, I think that's the big question though, that Shauna, not enough people are asking is that, based on my time and my money and my kind of like interests, you know, what two paths can I take? Then you can get more refined. So then like go down the active path. Okay. Yeah. I want to do this. I watch HGTV and I'm like pumped because I want to create some transformation and make money for my family. Okay, great. Now we can speak to that. But I think so many people actually can achieve their financial goals by potentially going more on the passive route because they just don't have the interest. They don't have the time. And they think I either got to become a landlord or not even get involved in real estate. When in reality, there's another path. So I just wanted to say that as almost like a prerequisite to the-
Let's dive in there just a little bit. Tell me a little bit about, I know we're kind of zigzagging here, but you know, tell me about that passive idea, because I would imagine there's probably a lot of people listening. They're like, okay, that feels like a little bit more manageable, especially to start off.
Yeah,
what are some of those options?
What I like about that option for people, because I'm both just from my own experience, I'm an active and passive investor, and I've worked with so many passive investors over time. In terms of getting into we focus on large multifamily, and you're buying a $10 million property. I don't have $10 million in my pocket right now. You're going to work with others to be able to pull together money to do that. That becomes where you're bringing in passive investors. So, a couple of thoughts there. Number one, you know, what you can do there is if someone has some projects might be as little as $10,000, $25,000, $50,000, depends on the bandwidth or the project, right? But a lot of projects, you can either become a partner in a sense, like a limited partner, so you're protected with, say, Shauna, you go and buy a property or a hotel. And so you're putting a legal structure together to say, you're the general partner, if you will. You're the operator. You're making sure the construction's going, everything. And then all my role is investing money in that project. And for that, I'm going to have a piece of that company and a piece of that property. And there's like tax benefits of that because I technically own a percent of that building. So that helps me if I'm a high earner and I can have some potential write-offs. So it's like you're an equity partner, like you're a partner with someone, but it's very limited in terms of what my scope is and also what my, we work with a lot of doctors, a lot of attorneys, and they do not want to, you know, be in something that they're going to get legally, you know, in trouble about if something goes south with the project. So limited partners mean that very thing, right? You're limited on what you're responsible in terms of anything like that. The other route, and there's a great book I'll mention, Lend to Live. It's by two women, published by Bigger Pockets. And it's all about how you can actually become a private lender. Just like a bank lends money out, there are a lot of people. And it's obviously, you have to protect yourself. There's pieces of the puzzle that are important. You don't just lend your money to your sister or anything. But it's actually another strategy, meaning I lend you money to go do your project and there's a promissory note. There's different things legally that need to be in place. But I'm not owning that property, but I'm lending it to you. And you're going to pay me 10% for my money. Well, that's pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Again, if you have the right knowledge and you make sure everyone's protected, of course, and you're not getting in risky deals, and that book kind of goes through that, that could be another advantage for people who have that money to invest. So I hope that helps. But those are like two routes, if you will, from a passive perspective. There's also REITs where you're going in more, you know, globally of projects versus having to like vet a syndicator. It's more ownership, right? What I'm suggesting is there's a little more of that onus on you to say, okay, I got to really vet. And then we do a lot of content around that. What are the questions to ask? Those sort of things.
So I want to talk a little bit about your community, because this is obviously, you know, a really important piece of having community, especially if you're, you know, first time and you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I get my training wheels, you know, off and actually get on the bike and invest in real estate, if you will. So you co-created the Real Estate Investor Community and podcast. And, you know, obviously you're focused on helping women become successful real estate investors. I was wondering, though, I don't know if you know this, but I thought it might be interesting to talk about. Do you know the history at all of women investing in real estate? Like, is this a newish trend, or, you know, have women been kind of doing this for years and years? Obviously, you know, we can look back in history, you know, I don't know, 40, 50 years, and there were a lot of limitations placed on women just in terms of getting bank accounts and credit cards and all of those sorts of
things.
It was not that long ago.
Not long ago.
So I don't know if you know anything about like the history of the sort of the evolution of women investing in real estate.
Yeah, well, I think it's a fascinating piece. Just 5 years ago, you know, here I am, and I can just kind of speak personally, and then I'll kind of go through some of the current stats that we're seeing from an investing perspective. We would go to RIAs, we would go to meetings, we'd go, because, you know, here, myself and Andressa, before we co-founded InvestHer, we're partners. We were flipping properties, we were doing deals. We go to events, and we literally would feel like we're the only women there. We're like, what's going on here? We're not the only women. We just didn't know a whole lot of women. And that was 5 years. That wasn't that long ago. And so even when we said we're going to start a podcast, I had a gentleman say to me, I don't think there's that many investors. So you might run out of women to invest. I'm like, we have not. 400 episodes later, we have not run out of women. I do think traditionally when people think of an investor, they think of a white male on Wall Street. I think there is still that level of, and then you start to do like a family breakdown, you know, and again, in a traditional family, who does what? And so statistically though, it's interesting. Women, I think it's like at 80 or 90% who control the percent. I think it's pretty high. I think it's on the 90% who control the finances, almost like the CFO of the family. It's a very common role. So it's not that women are not even touching money. It's just that that's one of the biggest percentages. And then you think about the buying power of women. Then it goes to investing, and the confidence of women investing shoots down significantly. So when it comes to any sort of conversation or any action, when it comes to investing, seems to be fairly still male dominated. And I think it's the confidence level is almost like in a 29 percentile of women feeling confident to invest. Period.
Why is that happening? Like, what's that disconnect?
You know, it's a fascinating. I have theories. I still have theories as to why that confidence is lower. I think it does come back to socialization. What we've been handed down. My mom wasn't this like, you know, real estate mogul. You know, and a lot of I think the generations have impacted what we see our role to be, you know, in terms of the feminine role, you know, and I do think we need examples. So that's why we're so, you know, mindful of different types of women investing and talking about the money they make and their net worth versus just, you know, the pair of shoes they're going to go buy. And that's great. Go Godspeed if that's your thing, but we want to talk about other things, right? And so I do think the confidence though, then you start to dig in terms of some of this research and some of this, just the general, you know, situation. And I think women, and again, this is like goes back to like research from girls and what they do in the classroom. Women don't raise their hand if they're not 110% sure that they have the right answer. If then they do the same study with a group of boys, and this is not my opinion, this is research, they raise their hand and they get the answer wrong. I'll go up to a gentleman at a networking event. I said, how are you doing? He's like, I'm killing it. I got 5 properties. I said, that's great, Joey. And then I go up to a woman. I said, how are you doing? Oh, I'm just getting started in real estate. How many properties do you have? I have 5 properties. And I'm not even making that up. That is literally, they have the same amount of properties. One of the women in my group, mentorship group said it on her sheet. She goes, I'm dabbling in raising capital for my real estate projects. I've only raised $10 million. Dabbling? That's not dabbling, honey. So again, I think women tend to be a little more cautious, a little more conservative, and they actually outperform men as investors though. So I think once women get the confidence, they go and they make it happen. It's, I think, getting over the hump of the knowledge, the community, and the support to say, you know, I want to create generational wealth. I don't need it because of a Ferrari, but I want it because I want to pass it down to my children. I think that's what most women do want who are in our space. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about that because you did a podcast episode recently and you talked about, you called it the 4 secret advantages that women have as investors. And you talk about how women are just better investors. Tell me a little bit about, you know, we talked about the confidence piece obviously being something that hinders women, but what are some of the advantages that really play into women having success and being able to build this generational wealth?
I think it comes back to like win-win and less ego. I mean, to be frank. And I think I see women negotiating with homeowners and they'll go in and it's not like, how can I get literally the best deal and take advantage of these homeowners? Not a lot of women come that from that place. And I'm not saying all men do, and that's totally general and not fair. I do think though, there's a level of when there's just like a win-win advantage that women come from. Is that ingrained? Is that nature, nurture? I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but you see them coming from the space of how do we make this work? And then that's where great deals are had, because the homeowner is like, you know what? I don't really want to own this home anymore. I don't really want to sell it because I'm going to get hit with taxes. And then there's some creative financing. You see women really successful at, like, it's called seller financing, where in essence, the person wanting to sell holds the note, and it's very legal. It's very strategic way to move ahead with someone with property buying. But it's, I've seen so many women be successful with it because you're almost like thinking about the homeowner and you're thinking about your own needs and you're trying to create that win-win opportunity. I think that's an advantage for women. I also think that, because women don't raise the hand as fast as again, you know, we're sharing with earlier, once they do a deal, it's usually the right deal, right? So that's an advantage, okay. Meaning, yes. You know, they really are pulling the trigger on the right deals. Now, sometimes, again, to the extreme, it's a paralysis by analysis. But in a good way, it's like once they make that call, it's usually the right decision. I really believe that. I think another advantage is that women are also come from a lot of the women come from a place of like wanting to do this for like a bigger reason. Versus it just dollars and cents, and, you know. And I think from a community perspective, impacting the community, legacy building, generational wealth, showing their kids that they can have a different lifestyle or create something bigger than this themselves. Like these are the reasons women, their why that we hear. It's not just this. I don't want to say, you know, it's not just this one little. Oh, I just want to make some more money. Yes, and it's a lot bigger than that.
Yeah,
I think that
deeper purpose.
Deeper. And I think that goes a long way when you know it hits the fan, there's this like ability to not give up and to keep kind of being persistent. That's what I've seen from the women in our community. But very holistic, I'd say, and also very creating this win-win. It could come from that. And I think that's a huge advantage in this business.
The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. Okay, listen, like many of you out there, I love Notion, our sponsor today. And I honestly use it every day for my notes and journaling. I also track our family expenses, and I manage all of our household to-dos. Notion has been such a lifesaver in helping me get a lot more organized because that's not one of my strengths without stressing me out. Notion is a place where any team can write, plan, organize, and rediscover the joy of play. It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. Notion is the AI-powered workspace that can summarize things like meeting notes and automatically generate action items and help you get answers to questions in seconds. it will honestly blow your mind. Notion is for everyone, whether you're a Fortune 500 company, you're a freelancer, you're starting a startup, or you're a student juggling classes and clubs, or you're somebody like myself that just really wants to get organized. Try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/ETM. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/ETM, and start turning ideas into action. And when you use our link, you are supporting our show, notion.com/ETM. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. All right, Liz, it's time to play the Your Relationship with Money Is game.
Okay.
So first question, if you had to describe your relationship to money as a cartoon character,
ooh,
who would it be?
Cartoon character. Oh, that's a good one. I sometimes have this like thrifty way about with money. I have a little bit of like this thrifty relationship with money where I'm thrifty, but then I splurge sometimes. So what character would that be? So random. I don't know why Betty Boop is coming to my head, but I don't even know if she did that, had that relationship, but she came to my head for whatever reason.
I love it. We'll go with it.
We'll go with it.
All right. Question number two. How many times a day would you say you think about money?
I would say at least, because it's in my business, right? It's in our world. I'd say at least 5 to 10.
All right. Question number three. If you had an endless supply of money, where would be the first place you would spend it?
I'd buy a lot of real estate, of course. After I invested it, I would give a percent of it away. I'd enjoy a percent as well. Probably go to love Costa Rica. I have not been to Italy. It's one on my bucket list. So I do a lot of traveling. But I would do those three things. I'd spend, I would invest, of course, mostly in real estate, maybe a business or two, and I would give a lot of it away too.
All right, question number four. What is one money secret you have that maybe you haven't shared with a lot of people?
It doesn't matter how much you make. It matters how much you keep. You know, and I don't know if that's a secret or not, but none of people think that way. I think more people thought that way, that actually be more wealthier than they are.
In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I want to talk a little bit about the money part of investing in real estate, because I know that's the part that stumps a lot of people, and a little bit about like realistic expectations. I was wondering if you have like an example or, you know, case study or like anything you could run us through of, you know, like how much money you made or what did it look like or how much money did you have to put down or like, you know, all of those like behind the scenes details that we really want to know that we don't find out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I think for a lot of people, they're just, you know, they want passive income. It's really not passive because you're actually doing something to gain that. And they're not analyzing it properly. We just sold an office building, Shauna, and I could share a little bit about that. So
yeah, that'd be great.
This office building was purchased 15 years ago, right? So I was a different investor at the time, and I'd love to almost share some of my mistakes because I learned a lot. My husband and I found this building. It was a 10,000 square foot building, vacant. It had one organization in it. It had a nonprofit, but they were moving and they were looking to sell it. We bought it for $525,000. Now, at the time, my husband and I didn't have a whole lot of money. We actually took a line of credit. Now, again, this, you got to remember, this is 2005. No, it's a little past that. It was probably 2006 when it was still like you could do anything for any price, right? So please know that.
Here's your property. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a different time than now. But, you know, but at the time, we got two lines of credit on both of my parents. Only home they own, and my in-laws. So again, my family didn't just like lend us money, but they said, here, you know, we can work with you on these lines of credit, which at the time, now in hindsight, I'm like, would I do that to my kids? I don't know about that, but that's another story. Our family really trusted us, and I'm very grateful for that. But anyway, we took lines of credit out. We had to put about 100, because again, we had pretty high levels. It may not be everyone's story, but we put about $100,000 down on this property, right? But again, it came from lines of credit. It wasn't just for, you know, cash waiting, but it's not it could be 100 grand. It could be depending on the property, right? So we knew we had to put money into the property. We actually, at the time, I can't remember how much we were going to get a construction loan of about 100 grand or so at the time, because it needed a bunch of work. It's a big building. Now, mind you, this was Trenton, New Jersey, which is a, you know, capital of New Jersey. And if we had done our own market analysis, again, we got enamored with the property. We started to do like the dollars and cents and said, okay, by square foot, we can probably make X dollars every month. And then we're like, we're going to get $5,000 in cash flow. And we were so excited and like, done deal, like check it off. We're going to be like out of the rat race. Well, as soon as we buy the building, the market crashed in 2008.
Of course.
And we're in a market that there's not a whole lot of people who wanted to rent a 10,000 square foot building. Like, so we are literally in like the biggest, like, what do we do? Right. And like anything, you cannot just, I mean, look, my parents' lines of credit was in this building, right? So it wasn't even like, oh, I'll just forgo that money and this, we just have more money coming. Like, this was it for us. And quite honestly, my parents' only home they owned. So it's a big deal. We figured out that this building, what it really needed was to be split up into small office use. And this was kind of before like all the different, you know, I don't want to say WeWork because WeWork went bankrupt, but other places where they, you know, they rent out little office space. And so we said, this is needed. And we talked to people in the community. So long story short, we broke it up into 18 tenants. And that was an undertaking. We needed more construction dollars. I think we almost had like, we needed to borrow another 50 grand. So we were in it for like 150,000, so to speak. And so, you know, again, this is a loan we got after we purchased it. So we're managing it ups and downs for 15 years. We ended up selling it to one of our tenants just this year. And we sold it to our tenant for $925,000. Now, we ended up putting a lot of money into it, a couple, you know, we profited $175,000. But I will say that we never made money over the 15 years, really, cash flow wise. And I'd also say, excuse me, this was one of the toughest projects we ever did because we literally didn't analyze the market the way we probably did. But even that we didn't analyze the market, we figured out what the community needed and wanted, and we created that. And then we worked really hard to, you know, to fulfill on that. And we stuck with it. We didn't know who was going to buy this building from us. It was, again, people weren't lining up to buy a 10,000 square foot building. But when you have a challenged property and you're figuring out the dollars and the cents, you really want to think about who would buy this property one day, who and why. And if you can't come up with a good reason, that's a problem because you're not going to hold it for the, you might hold it for the rest of your life, but you may not. So that became something I didn't think about when we started, but exit is important to think about as well.
Did that project, like, even with all of its like complications and, you know, you're in that terrible, like, you know, basically the next like depression period kind of in the US and all of that. Yeah. How did you stay motivated to continue to invest in real estate, like beyond that project?
And the funny thing too, Shauna, is that I quit my job as well.
Of course. Right.
Of course. So we had like not that much in savings. I'm like, what was I thinking? And I ended up going back to my job to 2010 just because I'm like, this is too intense. I think there's a lot of pieces. I think in life, people pivot too quickly or they quit too quickly. We had a few single family homes. We had about 30 units that were not cash flowing as well as we wanted them to. And then we had this office building. That was our portfolio. Then we started to go all in on one thing and start to get like almost like a proof of concept, meaning where are we having success? Are we having any success? And where we were having success was with small multifamilies, like a duplex. We'd go, we'd renovate it with the team, and then we'd refinance it. And then we did it with one partner. They were like, this is working. And then we've scaled that part of the business. So I think for me, what helped us not give up is that we were having, some things were working. Some things were not working. And so you constantly are looking at yourself in the mirror to say, I know we could do this. We just need to make some changes. And like, what are we learning? What do we not continue doing? So right now, all we do is invest in large multifamily. And we're starting to diversify slightly, but I'm very cautious of doing that with the wrong partners because I don't want to have happen what has happened to us. So I think not giving up. And also we had family's money involved in that project in particular, right? So I could have just been like, well, we could just foreclose on the property. And this is like, you know, my parents' single family home that me and my sisters are probably the owners of, right? Big deal. You know, my parents are around, great, but God forbid something happened. That's a problem for siblings. So we really were very motivated to get this all paid off, and they're both paid off with their lines of credit. That's completely, you know, done. But that's what helped us not give up, is the big picture, going all in on your success, wherever that's happening, and start to really shed what isn't working and just promising yourself not to do that again.
So, you know, we're in 2024. You know, what do you think some of the like big themes, trends, like, you know, in terms of specifically investing in real estate?
Yeah.
Like if we're a newbie, like what are the things you think we should like pay attention to?
I think there's, you know, COVID was such a powerful time in where people are living where they want to live, right? They're moving where they want to live versus having to live there for a job. I think what that did, and you're seeing this trend big time, co-living space, you know, people like reducing size of homes and really being more simple. You're seeing more experiences in like the hotel hospitality industry. So people are living there, they're communing together, they're connecting. I think there's this level of community that people are really thirsty of. And then not just for single people, right? You see these families, you see it all over. I think the idea that it's just the real estate is not the problem. Meaning you can't just think, okay, dollars and cents, this is a property and I'm going to make this return. I think right. It has to be doing something else. I think
there should be a story, right?
There's like a story there. Yeah. There's an experience there. I think I do think leaning into that, especially with, if you think of like short-term rentals, that's hospitality ultimately, right? It's not just like I do more like large multifamily, but even at that, what community building are we doing? We're doing garden. What's going to keep people here? It's not just, I don't believe people are making rental decisions and buying decisions in real estate just because of the money. It's bigger than that now. And it's bigger than that when I even started investing. So, you know, we're looking at a couple of projects right now, like a boutique hotel that creates this really powerful experience. There's a good friend of mine who has a boutique hotel in Philadelphia. And it's every room is named after a different woman who've been a trailblazer.
Ooh, yeah.
And then like when women commune together or they're connecting together and networking, it's got this really cool historical feel to it.
I think that
stuff matters right now. Even if you go, you know, like, oh, I don't want to buy a hotel, or I'm not saying that, but even on the small level of doing a short-term rental or a single family home that you're going to rent to a family, I do think the story and the experience is part of the buying decision and the renovating decision more than ever. And again, depending on your clientele, but I do think that matters. And I think that's going to be a trend that doesn't decrease. It's only going to increase.
I have a secret, I don't know what you call it, desire, want, wish, dream. I don't know what you want to call it.
we're going to make it happen.
Yeah. Of creating like whether it's like a boutique hotel or, you know, taking like an old motel and like, you know, renovating, but really creating that experience is something that it just has always been on my heart. And it's funny, my husband and I will like watch a show or something on TV where they've, you know, remodeled something. And then we'll sit and think about like all the things we want to do and like all of the experiences. But I think it really does matter. And I love that, you know, thinking about investing in real estate from that perspective and not getting just stuck in the numbers piece is like a really important lesson, I think, for everyone, you know, listening to infuse your creativity and your personality and think about what would you want to have and an experience, you know, in crafting that is just such great advice.
And yeah. And even, you know, comes in like the communication of like the before the actual stay, if you will, or event, and then after, and like what are you doing to communicate to people, because this is going to impact your reviews, this is going to impact their experience, this is going to impact them telling other people. That all matters now. Again, it's not just like apples to apples, it's like how was they treated, you know, and that matters right now, especially when it comes to experiences.
And I would imagine there's probably a lot of people listening that are, you know, in my shoes, like they want to do this. They really do, you know, but maybe they're stuck, whether it's the thinking or the money or the not knowing or, you know, all the different things we talked about. as we wrap up, like, tell me, you know, what are our like first steps? Like, where do we go from here? We've just listened to this conversation. Like, yeah. How do we take what we've heard and kind of go further in this journey?
Yeah. And not just to self-promote our community, but I think being part of a community that has people like you doing what you want to do and experiencing the challenges and having the questions. I had a woman just yesterday in our Facebook community say, I had a goal of buying my first investment property this year and I didn't do it. And I'm really beating myself up. Is anyone else having the same struggle? I mean, the thread of that comment was huge. And I don't think she's alone. But now, will that help her through this hump and how she sets herself up for success? Absolutely. Versus her just like, real estate doesn't work. I'm going to go back to whatever other subject. So I think surrounding yourself, getting the support and not knowing I always say it's not enough to know something. It's the community that's going to help you feel more confident, like take that confident action. So for three steps, like say, for example, Shauna, you want to buy that motel. Like, let's use you an example, right? I would definitely get connected. We have investor meetups across the country. So these are local groups of women that are getting together. Again, whether it's investor or whether it's a local real estate group, you want to find people who are doing what you want to do. Find them, connect with them. And again, I'm tired of women saying, well, I have nothing to give to them. Why would they want to give me any advice or help me? It's give and get. You know, that's what the beauty of networking is. So, but finding people who are doing what you're doing, one, you can potentially connect with them. Two, you can add resources to them somehow, whether it's, hey, let me be part of this project. And for that, I will help you. I'll be part, you know, I'll have this role. I can be part of the money side of it. I mean, there's a lot of creative ways you can join forces. But it's about taking action and getting to know the people that have done full cycle what you want to do. And then the barriers to entry usually are time, money, and lack of knowledge. So you want to say, how do I mitigate the risk here? So baby steps, you know, for you, finding someone who's already done a project like that, could you invest a small amount of money in a project of someone you really admire, local, doing what you want to do? Because for that, not only will you make a return on your money, more importantly, you're going to learn what they're doing. You're going to get the behind the scenes of that 8 to 10 unit. And there's people like that everywhere that are very trusted who are looking for additional resources so they can make more of these projects happen. If I had to do it over again, I would have done that hands down. I don't know if I would have bought a 10,000 square foot building. I probably would have taken that money and invested it with somebody I admired, small amount, not all of it, and learned from them on their dime, not my dime. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. But it's about taking those baby steps, learning, growing, and mitigating your risk, but not being stopped either.
So what do you say? Would you come stay at my motel if I decided to open one? Okay. While that might be a few years out, Liz's advice in this episode is so on the money. I think it is so practical and relevant. And I love how she talks very honestly about the market this year and why you really, really, really need to know your strategy and just the market in general before you make a move. I still believe in my heart of hearts that real estate investing is one of the best ways to grow wealth. I have seen it time after time after time, but you need to know the plan before you make the leap. So if you want to continue to learn from Liz, I would highly suggest it. You can check out her podcast, The Real Estate Investor Show, and join the Real Estate Investor community. I will have links to all of that in the show notes, as well as links to our episode sponsors who make this show possible. Just a quick reminder, be sure to snag your spot in my live virtual workshop, Spend with Intention. It's going to be on February 7th, and it is going to be so amazing. I would just absolutely love to have you there. You can head to etmpod.link/spendwithintention or just find the link in the show notes. So thank you so much again for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed it, if you know somebody else who is interested in investing in real estate, send them this episode right now. Tell them this is what you need to know for 2024. I'll see you right back here in a few days for a brand new episode.